episode 625 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Marvel Chronology episode. We are continuing our Thanos reading order. For those who want to follow along, we want to give a shout out to the Crushing Crisis website. That is where we got the reading order, and it started with the Thanos Rising miniseries by Jason Aaron, and we're up to the final issue. And if you're looking for the Crushing Crisis website, it's Crushing with a C and Crisis with a K, and the guy's done a whole lot of work over the years. I want to say is, you know what, let me not guess.
Do you think it's like updated all the time? Like if he added this to his Thanos one, like if a book tomorrow were to come out called Little Baby Thanos, would he add that to the list if it counted?
I don't know if he updates it. I don't know how often he updates each individual.
Because this is obviously the newest title I've read with you. Well, because it jumped from Secret Wars 2 to this. This right, is much more recent
than Secret Wars. Because I did talk to him about possibly coming on the show. I'm just looking for the email. He is constantly updating it. But he, Peter is his name. He lives in New Zealand. So I know he updates it frequently. He may not update like each particular reading order, you know what I mean? But he is constantly adding stuff to it. So it's a great website. I mean, it's got Marvel reading orders on there, DC reading orders. It's quite comprehensive. And anyway, that's where I found the Thanos reading order. There'll be a link in the show notes. And if you want to go and check it out, we are moving on to the classic Thanos era next, which starts with Iron Man 55, which is his first appearance. Then we're going to be looking at a Thanos story that really is a Drax story from what I'm understanding.
Is it from Annihilation?
No, it's from
that like 90s series or whatever.
No, all the classic like Thanos stuff. Yeah. All the classic Thanos stuff is like from the 70s.
Oh, so this is back to old Thanos stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean I think that for the most part, even though there are some parts of the current story that we just finished reading that are kind of more modern, most of the stuff that we read for read in Thanos Rising happens a long time ago. But there are some that, you know, it says present day, but I don't think it's really present day because I think Titan has been rebuilt. And you'll see what I'm talking about when we get to it. But anyway, yeah, the classic. The classic Thanos stuff. I mean, we've got the Iron Man, the very first appearance. We've got that backup story in Logan's Run, which came out in 1977. It does say after Logan's Run, a flashback in Warlock and the Infinity Watch, number 10. But I don't think we're going to – I mean, stuff in italics, it's like, yeah. We'll read, you know, just the main stuff. So then we're going to Captain Marvel issues 25 to 33. And that's the very first Captain Marvel series way back when. Then we've got a Marvel feature from 71, number 12. And we've got a couple of Daredevil issues, actually.
Interesting.
I always think it's interesting that Thanos is a cosmic character and he debuted in Iron Man. That's really strange to me, too.
That's weird, too.
Silver Surfer, Captain Marvel, whatever. And then Avengers, and then there is a Thanos annual from 2003 that is lumped in because obviously it's a flashback story that's lumped in with all the 70s stuff. We've got Warlock. That would be the Adam Warlock series, 9 through 11 and 15. We've got Avengers Annual 7 and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual 2. That's a really classic two-part story. Then we've got the death of Captain Marvel from 1982. So they're all, you know, with the exception of that annual, which is a flashback story that came out in 2003, they're all 1982 or older. Then we move on to the Infinity Trilogy from the 90s. So that's Infinity Gauntlet, Silver Surfer issues that tie into Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos Quest, Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, and then we'll go on from there. So, as I said, the A link to the Crushing Crisis website will be in the show notes if you want to follow along, read ahead, or get caught up. That's where you need to go. I mean, pretty easy to get caught up. We've only covered Thanos Rising to this point, so.
Though we saw him already. It's kind of out of order, because his origins should be before we see him in Secret Wars. Then again, I'm sure the list is out of order. I know it was doing it more in order of makes sense to read, not actual chronological order. What do you remember? Thanos was in one of the Avengers issues of Secret Wars 2, on the spinoff issues. Because we saw his ship. I can't remember.
Yeah, but this doesn't have any, like, we moved on from Secret Wars. This is a totally different
read. Oh, this is a different list?
Yes, this is totally different.
Oh, I thought this was a continuation of this list leading into, like, Secret Wars, whatever.
No. This is...
So is this, like, just a Thanos chronology?
Yes.
Is that what this list is called? Oh, sweet.
We have
complete... I thought it was step to get to...
No, we're completely
off... Secret Wars 2 or whatever.
No, we are completely off Secret Wars. We are completely off Secret Wars, which, to me, again, I mean, it started as a Secret Wars reading order. But now that we've covered Secret Wars 2 and the aftermath of that, it's more starts to become like a Jonathan Hickman reading order, sort of. I mean, it's a Marvel chronology. I mean, we're reading this stuff because I want to do the Thanos up through Annihilation, and then we'll probably go back to the Secret Wars reading order. But then we're going to mix in the Hickman stuff. So I think all of Hickman's stuff is pretty much included in the Secret Wars reading order, because Hickman's Secret Wars series, like everything that Hickman ever did at Marvel was leading into that Secret Wars story.
The one from just a few years ago, right?
Yeah, the one from 2015. Yeah. So, yeah, but no, this doesn't have anything to do with if you were to mix in, I mean, so the this is a Thanos reading order, and do you remember what issue was it that we saw Thanos in a Secret Wars?
It was
Wars
one of the
2?
Avengers. It was a space adventure where they were working with the Kree. And Nebula, I think, was there.
Yeah, we didn't see that. I mean, Thanos was dead at that time. He might have showed up in a panel, like, when they were... So it wasn't...
But still, if he was dead, and if this was the same reading order, then we would have read his origin before Secret Wars.
True.
That's all I was saying, because I thought we were on the same list.
Yeah, no, we're not. That appearance, if you want to call it an appearance, because it's just a flashback in one or two panels, that would take place after the Classic Thanos and before the Infinity Trilogy, because, you know, at the end of Classic Thanos, well, not technically the end, and not to spoil too much, because these are comics that are 40 years old. That two-part Avengers Annual 7 and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual 2... That's like one of the most classic Thanos stories of all time. That, like, Thanos is, they defeat Thanos. He gets turned into stone at the end of that. And the only reason he appears in anything after that is because he shows up in the Marvel graphic novel number 1, The Death of Captain Marvel, in like Death's Realm. Like, he's dead, and it's not overtly clear whether Captain Marvel is really seeing him or he's just like hallucinating or, you know, it's not. Like, okay, Thanos is back from the dead kind of thing. It's like Marvel is like reflecting back on his life, and he's visited by Thanos as well as, you know, a lot of other people. So when we get to the Thanos in the Infinity Trilogy era, 1990 to 93, one of the first things we're going to read is Thanos Quest, which explains how Thanos came back from being turned to stone. I mean, that's a long time. We talked about that before. That's a long time to keep a character dead in comics, 8 years, especially one as popular as Thanos. And, you know, he was popular even back then. And really, when you think about it, it's one thing for it to be 8 years, right? Like, think about if they killed somebody in 2010 and they brought him back this year. Comics have changed quite a bit since 2010. Like, we've done the whole DC's New 52 and then abandoned that, and then we did DC Rebirth. Like, all that has happened. Marvel's relaunched, I don't know, 7 times since then. Marvel Now, Marvel Point Now, Marvel Fresh Start, Marvel, you know. And it's no different back then. When you think of, like, when I think of the comics that were coming out in 1982 versus the comics that came out in 1990, I mean, you probably had even more change in that 8-year period than if we were to go back from 2010 to now. That's 2010 to now, in terms of actual story and actual like creators and the way comics are made, pretty much the same. You know, tone is pretty much the same. You go back to 1982 versus 1990, you're talking about the advent of different quality paper, talking about different coloring, starting to use computers to color. You're talking about 86 with Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns and, you know, all that kind of Killing Joke. Alan Moore Swamp Thing had concluded. Like, there was a lot of stuff that happened in the mid-80s, say from, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earth, Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. 82, there was no miniseries. There was no big event that, you know, had all kinds of tie-ins and everything. The comics were a lot simpler in 1982 versus 1990 when they brought Thanos back. So to keep somebody dead for that long, you know, like that's part of the reason he stayed dead for so long. Like it just doesn't happen now. Like even Wolverine, you know, he came back 2018, right? Or was it last year? When did the Generations one-shot come out? Wasn't that the end of 2017?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it was. So killed in Death of Wolverine in 2015 and back, you know.
Generations.
Yes.
Yeah, that was 2017. Yeah.
So Wolverine, like we're finally going to kill off Wolverine. He's going to be dead for a long time. Long time apparently is 2 years. 2 years they had him killed.
Kind of at Legacy. It was part of the Generations miniseries. But yeah. Then Legacy was the book where – that was the name of the book where they showed the early Avengers and showed that Wolverine was back with the stone.
Yeah, he robbed the beer truck.
Here we go again.
Yeah, the beer truck or whatever it was. All right, anyway, let's go ahead and talk about Thanos Rising number 5. A lot of good moments in this book. I mentioned already, written by Jason Aaron, pencils by Simone Bianchi. We've got inks and ink wash by Simone Bianchi and Riccardo Piracini. Colors by Eve Zvorchina. Letters by Clayton Cowles, covers by Simone Bianchi, and I don't see any credit for any kind of variant cover, so I'm going to assume that there wasn't one. So at the end of last issue, or toward the end of last issue, Death herself revealed that she was this constant companion of Thanos all along, this girl from his childhood that he professed to love, and like the forbidden fruit, the one person who always believed in him, who was always there for him, who he never could seem to get approval from or gain her love. And once she's revealed as Death, Thanos kind of goes mad in a way. Not that he already wasn't, you know, he was seen and talking to somebody who may or may not be there. But finally she coerces him or convinces him or subtly persuades him to – you know, if you really want me to love you, you'll go to Titan. You know, you won't be afraid of your homeworld. You won't be afraid of who you are. You'll go to Titan and you'll destroy it. So as soon as Titan comes into range, Thanos gives the order to his armada to fire. And the message on the page says, "Those who lived for even an instant knew right away Thanos had not come to broker surrender, nor to conquer or pillage or enslave. Thanos had come to kill." And it goes on to say that thousands died in an instant, so suddenly they never knew what happened. And those that lived for even a second, they automatically knew where this was coming from. They automatically knew who the source of their downfall was. They knew that Thanos, the son of Titan, had come home. And we see Alars, or a mentor there, saying, "Thanos, my son, what have you done?" as he sees Titan basically going up in flames. And aboard Thanos' flagship, Death is saying, "Listen to the screams. Have you ever heard anything so beautiful?" And once all the armada have exhausted all their missiles, Thanos says, he goes on to say, there's no signs of retaliation. And I love this line from Thanos. He says, "There won't be any. The only weapon this world ever created was me." That is so awesome that Thanos doesn't even think of himself as a being. Rather, he's just a weapon. And he orders his crew to go in for a landing. And again, Death is persuading him or you know, cajoling him on. "Yes, watch them burn. We'll bathe in their boiling blood and molten flesh." And so his crew tells him the raiding party is awaiting his orders. Thanos says, my orders are for all of you to go back to your quarters, every last one of you. You're not needed today. This world is mine to kill. And as he heads down to Titan, there's Death once again egging him on. Kill them all. All who dared turn their back on you, which is not the case. Nobody turned their back on Thanos. We see Mentor happy on the day of Thanos' birth, holding up Thanos for the cheering crowds, saying to them to behold the heir to Titan. And as they stand in that same spot, as Thanos and Death stand in that same spot, I can't talk all of a sudden, Death again saying, show them that hell has come to Titan. And Thanos says, not hell, God, for he believes himself to be. And as we turn the page, another great, great line from Latour here. Many, many murders later, and Death there, again, his companion, or still, I should say, you know, from the very moment I saw you as a babe in your mother's arms, this is the future that I envisioned. This beautiful world in ruin and you unshackled from your, from all but your ambition. So how does it feel, Thanos, to be reborn in fire and genocide? And this is, again, the tragedy of Thanos. He says, how do I feel? Well, how I feel, you know, that for which I hunger. In the flames at last, I will have it. You, all of you here and now, Thanos is ready to get down. And again, yep, again, she demurs and says, yeah, so you sell, but first, and he's like, woman, do not dare try. And he's like, no, see for yourself. It seems there's one last life to be taken. And as Thanos turns, he sees his father there, Mentor, holding a weapon on Thanos. Thanos says, there is. Father, what have you made? And Alar's answers, damn you, Thanos. And damn me for being such a fool that so many had to die before I could see for what you truly, truly are, the monster of monsters. And Thanos again, you made a weapon? That must have been difficult for you. Is it meant to kill me? And Alar says, yes. Just as you killed my beloved Susan, your blessed mother, and slaughtered your own homeworld and God knows how many others. And Thanos, again, just completely passive-aggressive with his father, says, then by all means, let's see if it works. And the following panel, Mentor is just kind of looking up at his son as Thanos towers over him. And the look on his face, I mean, very, very well done by Bianchi. You see the doubt that's immediately in Mentor's face. Like, can I really do this? Can I really kill my own son? Like, I don't know what it is about him. Is it just kind of the pacifistic nature of Titan? Because it doesn't seem like Kronos, Mentor's father, Thanos' grandfather, it doesn't seem like he would really have an issue killing Thanos. But for whatever reason, Mentor does. He can't bring himself to do it. And as we turn the page, he lowers the weapon and says, I can't, by all the gods. I'm not like you, Thanos. And Thanos takes the weapon from him and says, no, father, most assuredly, you are not. And Thanos holds the gun up next to his head and fires. It does nothing to Thanos, like literally nothing, and doesn't even stagger him. And Thanos says, for example, I would have built a better gun. And I have, as he discards or crushes Mentor's weapon in his hand and then fires at Mentor, drags him into his lab and says, hey, this is your lab. How fitting. Where you perfected the art of ignoring me for years, but now you have no choice but to bear witness to my wedding. And in walks Death, and Alar's is like, wedding? What madness do you speak of now? Who's left to marry? You've killed everyone. And Thanos says, Death will be my bride. She's been my sole companion these many years. And the light's starting to go on for Mentor. He's like, wait, what are you talking about? Are you mocking me and the thousands you've slaughtered here today? And Death, ever cheeky, are you sure he's your flesh and blood? I'm not seeing the resemblance. But Thanos says, she's standing right next to you. She's mocking you. And Mentor says, do you really believe you can see Death and you wish to wed her? Is this why you kill? And so Thanos says, come, woman, quickly, so I can be rid of this sad little dog. And he goes on to say, here at last, on this world of corpses, all dead by my hand, I'm finally going to have what I've always wanted. Some more great lines by Jason Aaron here. You will promise to love me as maggots love rotting flesh, as a knife loves a wound, as I, Thanos, as I love death. And she says, oh, will I now? Yes, damn you, no more delays. And Mentor has gone to one of his control panels, saying, you're screaming at yourself, boy. And Thanos says, be silent, I'm done with you and your precious machines. And Mentor's like, well, I may be able to use these machines to actually save you. So what Mentor does is he scans the lab, and he says, look, for yourself, Thanos, I'm scanning this room on every wavelength known and imaginable, many only known and imagined by me. And what do you see, Thanos? Only a boy and his father, a very, very lost, troubled boy. And again, death, egging Thanos on, tell him the truth, tell your fool of a father how I hide myself from all of those eyes, but those of my beloved. And Thanos, ever the obedient servant of death, Mistress Death hides her presence from all eyes but mine. Mentor's not having it. I'm a scientist, Thanos. You know this. The greatest on all of Titan. A world of scientific wonders, or so it once was. I designed and built this city from nothing. And for 5,000 years, I've explored the secrets of the cosmos. Secrets before which even you might falter and tremble. Nothing can hide from science, boy. Not my science. And if there's another being that exists on another plane of existence, whatever it might be, there's going to be energy. It can be detected. And look at these readings. My son, be the scientist I raised you to be. And death, Thanos, your father's ignorance is amusing, but is it wise to belabor? Thanos, there's no one here but us. There is no invisible woman, no personification of death. The person you believed you speak to, the woman you feel you love, she does not exist except in your broken mind. We see Thanos is thinking, like, is he doubting it? Death begins to laugh and says, this can't be your father. This man's a fool. Kill him already. Thanos, or Mentor rather, again, pleading with Thanos, son, don't blame your sins on an imaginary friend. You kill because you chose to kill. Once you can admit that, you can stop hiding from the truth and maybe you can change. Again, we see Thanos doubting himself. As Mentor says, it's not death you love, Thanos. It never was. You've only ever loved yourself. And all of a sudden, it seems like something changes within Thanos in that moment. He's like, no. Death's saying, he lies. Look, I'm right here. Look into your heart, my love. You know I speak the truth. Kiss me. Kiss me, lover. Mentor says, you're not a god or a monster at all. You're just another madman. And Death says, Thanos! And he says, enough! As he fires at Mentor, I curse you with life, Mentor of Titan. You'll watch your son defile the cosmos, and then we'll see who winds up the madman. Seems Thanos has, in his anger, decided to let his father live, thinking that it'll be worse torture for his father to live and see what Thanos becomes. But you can also tell it's in a way, I think he's leaving his father alive so that his father will learn the truth that death really does exist as a person, as a personification. So he heads towards his ship with the death trailing behind him. All of a sudden, the tables are turned. Thanos, Thanos, wait for me, my love. And in the wreckage of Titan, Mentor says, oh, father, you were right all along. Father of fathers, please, I beg you, kill my son. Calling out for Kronos to help him. Meanwhile, Death continues to trail Thanos, telling him to stop. Look at me. I know you don't seriously believe your father's lies. You know, maybe not completely, but there is doubt there. I think that, again, that's why he left his father alive. And Thanos, in a way admitting that, says, I believe that despite everything, despite all my struggles and sins, I am still alone. So after everything he's gone through, he's still not going to wed Death. He's still not going to feel satisfied. He's still not going to feel accepted and loved. And Death says, you've never been alone. I've loved you since the moment you were born. You know the truth in your heart. You always have. And Thanos says, well, how do I know that I'm not mad? And she says, because you know love when you feel it. Can Thanos even feel love? Truly? It's a good question. So finally, after five issues, four and a half issues, Thanos finally gets the kiss he's always been wanting for. It's a pretty epic image there. And now that Death has kissed Thanos, she believes that her hold on him once again is strong and says, "Come, there are worlds far more interesting than this mud ball, and together we will burn them all." And Thanos stands there amidst the ruins of everything he'd ever known, waiting for the fire in his gut to finally be quenched. He finally got what he wanted, right? He got a kiss from Death. And he's waiting for all his many questions to at last be answered. But there are no answers, and there's no quenching of the fire in his gut. Instead, all there is cold. As Thanos says, "Her kiss, so cold," and he trails off. So he found that the fire in his gut burned hotter than ever. And the one question that now roared above all the rest, what next? So again, all this has been in the past of Thanos, his early adventures of him really becoming Thanos the Mad Titan. So we return to present day for the last couple pages here. Once every solar cycle, a lone visitor comes to the silent, frozen world of Titan, walks upon the ashes of the great city where he was born, the Utopia left in ruins. Thanos the Destroyer has come home to remember who he is. And once again, his companion there is Death. She says, "Thanos, do you remember this was where we first kissed? Will you kiss me again, my love? Please? It's been so very long. Please talk to me. I need you." But he ignores her. He's come to Titan, and he had a flashback. He's gone back over his whole life in his mind, thinking back to the boy he once was, once a boy who was capable of love. And everything he's done since then, every world he's conquered, every success he's had, every life he's taken, he really has done so alone, right? He at one time had companions, and he turned his back on them for Death. And does Death really exist? It's interesting to think about. And on the last page, we see Thanos walking back toward his ship with the Death calling after him, "Thanos!" And that's the end of the series. So, fitting conclusion. Were you satisfied with it, Nick?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's about what I expected from the... I mean, it's kind of... It doesn't need to be five issues, maybe, sort of thing.
Really?
I don't know if you... I don't know, because, like, it seems like there's one twist per book that you kind of saw coming. But I do... I really enjoy the no one else seeing Death thing, because I feel like... Is Death then... Is it raised the question if Death is real in any of the comics with Thanos? Or do we know Death is... We've seen Death in Secret Wars as a real person, personified.
Yeah, well, that's... But, you know, that's really the question here, right? And you think about it...
Well, here you're like, I don't know, but we know Death exists, right?
Right. So, again, it's the question that... And you think about it in terms of, okay, this is the flashback story. This is before... Because even Mentor, you know, there's that moment in this book where Mentor's searching and saying, yeah, if there was any kind of energy, we would see it. But is it supernatural? You know, like Death, oftentimes we think of Death as something supernatural, something that can't be measured. But that's not Mentor, right? He's always going to think in terms of technology and science and things that can be explained. And go back to that old saying that any civilization or technology that's sufficient advance will appear as to be magic to something more primitive. But once you get advanced to a certain state, you can kind of understand it. It can be explained away with science, maybe.
Well, I feel that's like a scientist, like a foolish scientist outlook, is that there's nothing more to be learned or to be discovered.
I don't think he's like,
if you're
that
smart, you should understand that there's something you still can't understand.
No, I don't think he's saying that.
There's always something to be learned, or a new signal to be picked up, or a new dimension or something to feel energy from, right?
Yeah.
Like in a world like Marvel Universe, there's got there are tons of things that defy explanation.
Right. Well, but that's my point. Like at this moment, I don't think Mentor, you know, at the time this story was told, I don't think Mentor maybe believed that Death as an entity existed, right? But yeah. I think that probably changes by the time you get around to like the timeline of the death of Captain Marvel, And we'll see when we get there. I'm not going to go and read it. I've read it several times, but it's been many years and I don't remember. But it'll be interesting to see, because Death certainly is a character in that book. And Death is a character, you know, throughout the Marvel Universe at various times. Like you said, we saw her in Secret Wars.
Cool, I mean, day to death.
She shows up in Avengers from time to time. Just like, you know, Chaos and Order and the Inbetweener and Eternity and all these other kind of abstract beings physically manifest themselves at times. But here, you know, that's the thing. She's not letting herself be seen by anybody but Thanos. And you have to wonder, what is it about Thanos that allows him to have this connection to this? Because you can stop thinking of Death as a person in a way and think of Death as more of obviously a state of being or a lack of being in a way. But it's so it gets really abstract when you stop and think about it. And maybe you can think of it as, okay, so Thanos always in a way had a connection to Death from the moment he was born for whatever reason, if you stop thinking of Death as a being. But in order for him to have that connection, he's got to perceive Death as he's got to envision Death or give the attributes of like a being to Death, right? So he can have a way to communicate, to facilitate communication. Because you can't talk to the wind, so to speak. No. You know what I mean? So he's got to, in his mind, give her or give the concept of Death like personal, the attributes of like a person, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny when we were reading, when you were going back over this issue, it just got me thinking about how, like, yeah, Death took on an attractive girl, but she wasn't like the most attractive girl at school or the most attractive girl Death. I mean, Thanos slept with over the years. It's just, at first I was like, yeah, she was just like nice to him and stuff. But it's like, yeah, but she's also the first person to like tell him what he wants to hear. Like, oh, your killing's fine, which is what Thanos has always wanted to hear. Because I think even without the influence of Death, he strikes me as he was born a psychopath. Like,
I don't know, though. When he was
actual terms.
When he was a little kid, he didn't even want to hurt a little lizard and didn't
– I guess it's because it reminds me of Dexter so much where, you know, someone thinks they're normal and then they kill their first person. They're like, oh, that felt good. That's the way this kind of unfolded where, like, he wouldn't kill anything. And then he killed the lizard and he was like, oh, that felt great. Like, I want to do more of this and then pretend it's in the name of science. Like – stories remind me of each other, but I'm sure this is Marvel Comics. This is completely different, but that strikes me as that similar to that story.
Yeah, but.
And I'm sure I picture Death as more of a almost comparable to the Grim Reaper, even though she doesn't do a lot of killing on her own, I guess, but like almost in a way where she is like a Marvel equivalent of a ghost.
Yeah, I guess
so, she could have been there for his birth or something too, like we talked about earlier.
I see it differently. You're looking at it as Thanos was born, like you said, a psychopath, and it was just a matter of like unlocking. So you're saying it's completely nature. Like, is he was born a psychopath that had murder in his heart and was just ready to start killing.
Of your mom almost killing you that he says he remembers. Like, I'm sure that's trauma one needs.
To me, it's neither here nor there. When you look at the story, at least the story that Aaron told, it seems like he, because of the way he looked, as much as in his scientific mind, you know, his father, greatest scientist on Titan, brought up to be a scientist and think logically. So in his mind, he knows why he looks different. It makes sense to him. But he seems so sad when we first meet him as a little boy because he has no friends. And so to some extent, even though all the rest of the little kids understand too why he looks the way he looks, when we first see him on that playground, he is alone. And when he finally makes friends and they seem to enjoy playing with Thanos, they come, they befriend him. They're all friends. And then like, who is it
that tricks him?
Yeah. Death. Hey, go to these dangerous caves. what she had
to, jewels in there or gems in there.
Yeah.
And what like she, gems one day.
What did she have to do? I mean, did she have anything to do with the cave-in? Did she cause the cave-in? And so
we saw the marking on the wall.
Right. So, you know, it's definitely insinuated that she or intimated that she causes this. And then it's like, okay, so I'll cause this. Thanos doesn't have a lot of friends. He loses the friends he has. It's, you know, a tragedy in his life. It's very traumatic. And then in turn, I will be able to then convince him to go kill these creatures that previously he would never have harmed, told them, even when he was trapped with them, that he wouldn't harm them, even got sick and squeamish when he was dissecting a dead one. So, I mean, you can't really, I mean, that to me, that argument is that it's nurture. It's death nurturing Thanos. And, you know, all along the way, she's been the voice in his ear. So you look at it one of two ways, right? Because to me, that's not nature, right? Like,
and your way is also comparative, not completely. I'm not dissing this storyline. I love it. It's comparative to like Anakin's storyline in Star Wars, where it's like,
why do you have to keep comparing Thanos to movies?
Well, because like all these stories are similar. Like they all follow like similar, you know, like paths and stuff. I mean, all mythology, whether it be movies, TV, or novels, kind of carry these themes.
That's true, but you should never compare Thanos to Anakin because...
Well, no, I'm not, that's why I didn't want to insult Thanos that way. I'm just saying the story you're kind of discussing is like someone being in his ear.
Those prequels shouldn't even exist, and we will not discuss them on this podcast. No, I agree.
It's just...
Jake Lloyd, Hayden Christian, nope. I'm
hey, we're in agreement, man. I wasn't trying to compare it in that way. I was trying to compare the overall plot.
Striking it from the record. But so you have to look at it in terms. Okay, so if we want to look at it that way, nature versus nurture, death, you know, quote unquote, death nurtured him and like molded him to become, you know, what he became because she knew that he would eventually bring more death to her and, you know, bring her power because he would kill millions and millions. So you can look at it that way, or you can look at it the way that you're talking about, where from the moment he was born, his mother saw death in his eyes and wanted to kill him. And you can also look at it your way, that this is who Thanos was. If you buy into the fact that death, as she has appeared all throughout this 5-issue miniseries, only exists within Thanos's mind. Cause in that case, it's just him like enabling himself, right? Like his mentor even says when he confronts him in the lab, you know, don't blame your killing on an imaginary friend. You kill because you want to kill. And so maybe Thanos was a gentle and kind of docile child, but maybe he was just repressing those urges that he didn't even completely understand in the beginning.
That's why he didn't want to cut the animal either, is he didn't want to start down that direction. I always got the impression.
Yeah, I don't want to do
like
anything.
He knew cutting into one thing would lead to...
It very well could be.
But even that... Okay, let me preface this. This was 2011, right? Is that the year of this?
No, 2000... Oh, wait. Is it 2011?
I don't remember.
I think it's... Hold on, let me look. I think it's...
No, we've been closer to 2015 or 2014.
I think it's 2013, actually. Yeah, okay. It's 2013.
So this came out after Star Wars and after Dexter. It's possible this guy's seen both of them and was inspired by either.
What did we just talk about? Not bringing up movies or TV shows.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that even follows a Dexter story too, where he says he has a dark passenger that speaks to him. That's his way of trying to say it's not his fault. Like, that's kind of death here also. I'm just drawing connections between awesome shit. So
you and your movie
pop culture influences pop culture influences pop culture.
Maybe we could ask Jason Aaron. I did invite him to come on the show to talk about Thanos Rising.
Yeah, you can just ask, what are your inspirations, and see if he lists Dexter at all.
Unfortunately, he's too busy and could not commit to coming on the show anytime in the near future. So maybe at some point, if I run into him at a show, I'll ask him. So did you rip off Dexter and the Star Wars prequels?
It's just like,
because my co-host Nick thinks that you totally did.
No, not a ripoff, because it's even like it's even like this. I don't compare every comic to a movie series, but this one just reminded me of Dexter from like early on when she saw death in his eyes. I was like, huh. But it is started by an event, and that series, not he wasn't born that way, but an event happened at his young age. So I don't know, but most comics don't make me think, huh, this reminds me of your TV show. Most comics, I'm just like, oh, yeah.
All right, everybody.
Another more comic.
Read comics, don't watch TV. You see what it does to you? You can't read good comics without thinking about TV if you head down the
you can 99% of the time. This was that 1%.
What? Yeah, because you never talk about movies and when we talk about comics.
Well, normally I'm talking about the Marvel movies when we're talking about the Marvel comics, not Dexter.
True. All right. Enough Dexter talk. I'm Dextered out. But yeah, if you look at the two kind of options we've saying that there are, so it's his imaginary friend. It's always been his self, or is it really death that, you know, obviously he had the potential, let's say. But if all these little key events hadn't happened when they happened, could Thanos have been like a worthy successor to his father, leader of Titan, almost heroic in a way? Which one do you buy into?
Well, to be clear, I do think death in this case is a separate entity influencing him, but I think it was, she's just pushing him along faster and it's always inside.
So you're taking it's so not, so
death offering, isn't part of his psyche, but death is influencing him. But Thanos already had it in there.
So I'm offering choice A or choice B, and you're picking choice C. Like my,
which was always my real choice.
Like B. My 7-year-old does when I give her choices between two things, and she picks it. Do you want pizza for dinner or fried chicken? Yeah, lasagna sounds great.
I could have both. This is like chicken parm. You got your marinara and your chicken. Mine's like that. It's a combination of the two.
Combination. I don't know where I come down either, because I mean, here's the thing about it, right? Like, so many people have written Thanos over the years now. You know, he originally was a creation of Jim Starlin, and just Jim Starlin wrote him. And I think in that way, I'd have to go with B. He just was born evil, so to speak. He was always going to be that. He was always going to be the murdering mad titan, completely nature over nurture. Then as he became more popular, Marvel's like, more, more, more. Starlin's not always going to be the one that writes him. And then Starlin came back to Marvel, and he was going to be the only one that wrote him. And then Donny Cates, and yeah, anyway, it's a big convoluted mess, and Starlin's gone away. But I always feel like Thanos is at his most pure and his most true when Starlin writes him. But the fact that he's become such an important part of the Marvel universe, to the point where he's even been an anti-hero at times, they've tried to redeem him and he's done like heroic things. To me, it doesn't really work that way, but he's become so complex now that there's no way that this story that Jason Aaron wrote, this Thanos Rising story, could really work if it was made like before Thanos came back with the Infinity Trilogy, right? Like after the death of Captain Marvel, he didn't show up for 8 years. If sometime in that 8 years they'd said, oh yeah, now we're going to tell the origin story of Thanos, and they told this story, everybody would have been like, well, no, that doesn't really make sense, because the argument can be made that Thanos is really – he's not an evil character. He's a tragic character who just had – you know, the worst possible things happened to him at the worst possible moments that pushed him down the path to becoming who he was. And, you know, he does have to take some personal responsibility because he did make some bad choices, you know, fathering all those children and then going and killing them. And so he's become so complex. And so it's a good thing and a bad thing in a way, because sometimes you want your villains to just be simple and you can understand them really well. But I would make the argument that you can read this series, this 5-issue series from Jason Aaron, Thanos Rising, and you can make the argument that, yeah, like what you think, Thanos was always going to be evil, and this personification of death, who you believe, you know, actually exists, it's the actual entity of death personified in the Marvel Universe, And she pushed him along because she saw the potential in him to cause a lot of death. And so she sped it up. I think that's a completely legitimate way to read it and a completely legitimate argument. But I also think you could take the other tack and say, no, it's not nature, it's nurture. Death saw that Thanos had the potential, but left to his own devices, mm-hmm. and with a few breaks going the other way, that he could have turned out to be heroic. I don't know that we always need to make our villain. I know it makes them more interesting. Toyo Harada always comes to mind when we talk about layered villains and working in that gray area, and it's more reflective and relatable of real life, you know, because nobody's 100% good and nobody's 100% bad. When it comes to telling comic stories, though, I feel like sometimes it's okay to have really simplistic, you know, think back to the Silver Age, more mustache twirling villains. But I think in this case, in this story, Aaron has introduced a lot of doubt and a lot of gray area. And I think you can look at it either way. And I think they're both legitimate.
Yeah. I mean, because like, if we're talking about like this, like Joker is not a sympathetic villain. We don't know. They even like, I actually, before we did this, I was thinking like Thanos' origin would also be more interesting being unexplained. You know, in a way where it's like, oh, well, he's just this complete badass who came out of nowhere, you know. But, yeah, but I personally, I do like, I mean, there's a time for both. There's time for mustache twirling, and there's a time for, like, I do this because I'm hurting, or you understand my reasoning, or whatever. And I usually enjoy the villain. Most of the villains I enjoy are the ones who are sympathetic. Like, in a way, where it's like, he's doing terrible things, but it's like, well, maybe his like reasoning isn't so terrible, or he once was a good person. You know what you were kind of saying.
Well, yeah, he's killing all these people, but
he's still terrible.
The people he's killing are serial killers, so it's okay.
So you brought up that. I was gonna bring up the film real quick without spoiling it for you, but yeah, like they make with a different path than death. I know you hate that they changed that. They make him a sympathetic villain. And even he's the protagonist, where it's like, well, he is doing a lot of terrible things and murdering lots and lots and lots of people. But I kind of get it.
But he's just an eco-terrorist. It's so stupid to me, just because like we've talked about it before. If you're worried about resources and now you have omnipotence, just make more resources. Make the galaxy bigger.
Well, it's because Thanos is already a psychopath in that too. He's not like a good guy, I don't think, before his planet got destroyed. I just feel like there's always an evilness in him, even if he thinks it's the right thing.
Yeah.
Well, here's what you always want. You want a story where the villain thinks they're the hero or the best villains.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
they think they're right. Even Joker thinks he's right.
Yeah. The villains, they always are the heroes of their own story. Was it you, though, that gave me the analogy? Of Avengers Infinity War of like musical chairs. So you have 10 kids and 5 chairs.
Yes.
How do you solve it? If you're Thanos, you kill 5 of the kids, but anybody else, you'd be like, you bring like 5 more chairs. Duh. It's so
because you can double the resources.
Stupid. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just.
No, but that's why I don't, people joke about that all the time, but I don't think that's a weakness because I think Thanos is like, yeah, he's still an evil. He murdered before he had the gauntlet, and the gauntlet can let him double the resources, but he prefers the getting rid of people way.
I just think that they still could have done it that way, but they could have added in the, like, yeah, this guy worships death. So, but really, I don't know. I guess it just doesn't really make much sense.
They confused that a little bit because in Thor, which was 2 movies before, the bad guy is Hela, the goddess of death.
Right.
And actually, I thought they would turn her into real death, which would have been a cool way to go.
Yeah.
But I think they're trying to make him more relatable and less crazy for a movie, for a general audience who's like, death is a character, and she's a hot woman sometimes, but she's bones the rest of the time, and Thanos still loves her.
Yeah. I mean, we're not here to fix the MCU, but I do feel like they could have. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with saying this is a guy who loves to kill and worships death, and so, yeah, his the ultimate. They even could have done it where, okay, so this guy believes that death will, like, reveal herself to him if he kills enough people, And then he will, you know, ascend to like godhood or you know, cosmic entityhood if he can, you know, be, if he can have a connection with death. So let me kill half the universe. Death appears before him, you know, gives her a kiss. Whatever. That could have worked. I don't know. I just didn't get by the whole.
I think it is to make him sympathetic. Resources, I think that's the main reason.
Resources are scarce. I don't know. I really prefer making him sympathetic in the way that Jason Aaron did with.
Man, yeah, but that's the thing. You'd need a film franchise. You'd need a film before the film.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I don't think
the movies you have to simplify and jump.
Yeah, you couldn't. You could not have told Jason Aaron's story in one movie.
Well, what you could do it in one movie, but it would have to be a movie before Infinity War.
Right.
It right. couldn't be part of that movie. Apparently, there's a rumor they cut about 30 minutes of footage of Thanos' origin that we'll never see.
I do think that this would actually make a great movie.
Yeah, I'd actually kind of do too. First, I was doubtful when we were at issue 3. I think I even said in the podcast I would never want to see a movie version of this, but I've changed my mind.
But I don't know that you – I don't know you could do it now that the
other – I don't think they – well, they wouldn't.
That the other MCU Thanos exists. But maybe you know.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the same story whatsoever.
Disney has that streaming service. You know, this would make
making other shows.
Yeah, but do you think they would do a Thanos that told this story and was completely different than the Thanos?
No, it would have to tie in. But I see you could still tell the story that not necessarily he's still doing stuff for Death, but Death's the one who's like, "Hey, I mean, you know the way to solve this problem, right?
Hey. Is
to
murder everyone." Hey, girlfriend. Yeah,
hey, Thanos. You got to kill people to save Titan. Like, I can see that still kind of working into a
I don't know,
TV save show, Titan. Considering they're making, like, Loki, Scarlet Witch, and Vision, and Bucky, and Falcon shows. The Thanos show would be sweet.
I don't know. Does he need...
He doesn't need it, but I'd have to watch it.
No, I wouldn't want him to, like, save Titan. He does seem to have mother issues, too. So you wonder if if it could work as like his mother was killed in, you know, it's, I don't know. It's tough. You really have to make some changes because Titan is, you know, the word utopia is used over and over and over. Cause I was going to say you could have his mother killed in some kind of riots for some kind of scarcity of resources.
Yeah. But he explains it that way too. In the movie, he's like, it was a paradise.
It was a paradise until too many people started existing in the galaxy and you.
Well, his planet got overcrowded. Yeah. And he even says they called me mad. And I'm like, oh, that's a cool way to like just say the Mad Titan slyly.
I would totally go in for
suggested the genocide. He's almost like a Jor-El type guy where he's like, I knew the Earth was ending or Titan was ending. So I suggested we kill half the people randomly. And they called me mad.
Yeah, I would.
So he was already crazy.
I would totally go in for a Thanos that was like as close a Thanos series that was as close to this as possible. I mean, again, like you said, I don't think they would do it just because they have the other Thanos, but I really wish they would because I think it would be really great. Even if it was animated, I think that would be great. And then you can
that would
I
mean, be cool.
You can be really true to this story and not have to worry about you know special effects and all that kind of stuff. So, anyway, that reminded me when you said about movies a second ago. Did you go see Superman when it was the 40th anniversary?
No, my theater didn't get that. I was surprised. We have most events. We didn't even run the event. I heard about it from your Facebook account, I think.
I would have thought that if your theater didn't. I mean, seeing Chris.
Well, I didn't know about it.
You didn't know about it till it was over?
No, I didn't know about it until I saw it on your Facebook, which is when you were going, or your Twitter.
But I mean, they had more showings. The last showing.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you, and you're going to hate me for this, but you shouldn't because you don't watch a lot of the movies. I've never seen the original Superman movies.
Which is exactly why you should have gone to see
I know.
That movie on the big screen because it does something on the big screen that it.
The classic movies are always hard for me to watch because of when they're shown. Like, I would have loved to have seen Die Hard at 30th anniversary, too.
But. Die Hard. Yeah, that's a great movie as well. So I'd make the argument. There's this scene where – so Superman comes. He meets Lois Lane. They have like this date where they go flying. He takes her flying, asks her some questions, whatever. It's before she writes the first article introducing Ready Superman. And then he brings her, he drops her off on her balcony, and he leaves. And he and Lois actually has a date later that night with Clark Kent. And so, you know, Superman drops her off, flies around the corner, changes.
I've seen that scene.
Comes knocking where he like he walks in and she goes in the other room to change and he's like slumped over and he takes his glasses off and he stands up straight. And it's like, I would argue that that is some of the best acting ever by anyone ever. And Christopher Reeve at the time was only 24 years old. And in that moment, you believe that, yes, it's possible that with just the hair parted on the other side, the opposite side, and the glasses and the demeanor that somebody like Lois Lane, who's, you know, obviously a smart, intelligent person, could be fooled. Because it's so amazing. Just a transformation that he... digital effects, no special effects, nothing. It is such an amazing scene. And to see that on the big screen is it's pretty awesome. And I still think, like, without question, and I know a little bit of it is nostalgia, but I don't think a lot of it is, honestly, because I was only 4 years old when Superman came out, and I barely remember seeing it in the theater. So there certainly wasn't like, oh, that's Christopher Reeve, whatever. But he is the best. Like, he's the Superman. He's the actor that looks the most like what I would picture Superman to look like.
I've never seen the Superman movies. I agree with you.
And yeah, I mean, just when you look at him, he just looks like Superman. I mean, the blue eyes, he's like 6'4". You know, he's not like overly muscular. I mean, I like the way Henry Cavill looks as Superman as well. I think that's one of the
He's a good look. Positives. He's just not good Superman.
Yeah, there haven't been a lot of positives about the Superman movies that he's been in, or the DC movies he's been in. But the way he looks is one of them. But even as great as he looks, I think Christopher Reeve looks better.
And then he doesn't do a good Clark Kent. That's discernible.
He hasn't even hardly been on screen as Clark Kent.
Well. He's on screen. The ultimate cut of Batman v Superman.
I didn't see that.
Adds like 30 minutes, like 15 minutes of it is him being a reporter. And it's just like, it's still Henry Cavill being giant.
Yeah.
He's never slumping over or like.
I never saw that.
He's not even wearing glasses half the time.
I never saw the director's cut. So, yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we're off topic once again. See, every time you come on, we end up talking about movies and TV shows, which is, this is comics. Comic source, not the TV.
Yeah, add a little bit diversity for
the TV source like or me. The movie source. Those are trademarked, by the way. You can't start those podcasts without my permission. So, anyway, anything else we want to say about Thanos Rising? I feel like we pretty much covered it.
No, I'm glad I'm back for these Thanos stories because obviously the movies have made me a fan, and I'm sure even though you don't like the movie, that's one of the reasons you picked Thanos to go with next was that. He's the talk of the town right now.
That probably
in
was
comics
like,
and on the big screen.
That probably was about 5% of why I chose it. I'd say the vast majority, I'd say probably 70% of why I chose it was because I've always liked Thanos. I'm sort of contrarian in nature, by the way. I don't know, maybe you listeners could tell that. But so when something becomes really popular, I tend to kind of shun it a little bit because I don't want it to seem like I like it just because it was popular, but man, I have always loved Thanos. And it bothers me a little bit. Like, it almost feels like a lot of these people are bandwagon fans and they don't really understand Thanos. But
I'm a bandwagon fan.
I try not to.
Doesn't mean I don't love it.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm learning
more about his real history. I want to read the comics now.
And again, I don't mind that necessarily, but when I do, the reason that, you know, I mentioned that bandwagon fans. What I do have a problem with it, though, is because I know it's just a few fans that do this. They'll get on social media and they'll argue with a longtime comics fan about, no, Thanos is an eco warrior and he always blah, blah, you know, I know more than you. And you're like, really? Because I've read every Thanos appearance, you know, ever in the comics or whatever. And I mean, they're completely different versions, you know, think of it as, you know, to borrow from DC, just, you know, different multiverses, you know, Thanos.
Marvel's even said that in an interview, the guy's like, yeah, just consider the MCU a different universe than the comics.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just another iteration of these characters.
But anyway, 70% why I chose Thanos is because I love Thanos. 5% is because he's actually pretty popular right now. And I'd say the other 25% is because we were doing the Secret Wars chronology, and I do want to get back to that. And when we get back to that, we're going to cover the Annihilation event, and Thanos' Reign Order ties in to the Annihilation event. So at that point, if we do the Thanos chronology up until we get to Annihilation, and then we do Annihilation, at that point, once we finish with Annihilation, we could either keep going with Thanos, or we could switch back to the Secret Wars, because they completely intersect.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to make that decision when we come to it. It's many, 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 many weeks away, maybe even years. I haven't counted the actual issues, but it is quite a while. So we don't have to worry about that for a while. I mean, Annihilation is 2006, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to be on, Iron Man 55 came out in 68, I think. Yeah. So we've got, what is that? 40 years? 40 years of Thanos to cover? 38 years of Thanos to cover? I mean, obviously, 8 years he wasn't there.
He's dead for eight, yeah.
But still, 30 years worth of Thanos stories to cover before we get to Annihilation. So, no, because that would be if it came out in 2018. I was figuring for 2018. So if it's 2006 would be – no, it's still 40 years. Yeah. Wow, long time.
I'm too tired to do math.
Too tired. I had too many beers. I can't do math. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. Anything else? Any last words on Thanos Rising?
No, I'm excited to keep going because I do enjoy Thanos as well, but because of different reasons, but it got me back to the comics. So.
Yeah, the only last thing I'll say is, it's been the same art team all along, and they knock it out of the park. And there's always one or two pages, usually splash pages by Simone Bianchi, that are amazing. This issue 5 is no different. Thanos giving the order to fire upon his planet is great. When you see Thanos superimposed over the missiles hitting his planet, that's awesome. I specifically mentioned as I was going through the issue, the full page splash of Thanos finally getting his kiss of death.
That's great.
Is great. Also, it's not a big scene. You know, it's a smaller panel. But when Thanos shoots himself with his father's gun, that's awesome. As well. And then the big full page spread that it ends on with Thanos walking away from death and death yelling after him, Thanos, is pretty powerful as well. It really hits home Thanos's feeling that everything he's ever done up to this point in his life, he's done so alone, which that's a whole nother podcast in and of itself, just talking about Thanos and is he alone? Who does he relate to? I'm talking about his relationships, because it has changed a lot in the last 5 years or so. And we're talking even more than that in terms of when this story took place, before a lot of the Infinity stuff, especially the Infinity Watch stuff. And at this point, when this story ends, all the flashback and also the present day of the story, as Thanos, destroys Titan, talks to his father, leaves him alive, walks away from death. At this point, Thanos has not met his arch nemesis, Adam Warlock. That has not happened. That's a very interesting relationship that I'm sure we'll explore more of. He hasn't met Captain Marvel, which is another relationship much different than Adam Warlock. I feel like the Adam Warlock relationship is more they have an understanding of each other more, whereas Captain Marvel, it's more adversarial. And then the last relationship that I'll mention is like the relationships that he has with like Nebula and Gamora and all that kind of stuff. So and also Silver Surfer, which again, that's very much adversarial. So it'd be interesting to go back after we do a big chunk of the Thanos reading order and talk about, does Thanos still feel alone? Is he still a solitary? Because take away death, like if you give the argument that whether you believe that death actually exists as like an entity in the Marvel Universe, as more of a person or a being in the Marvel Universe, whether you believe that or not, it certainly seems to be that she's not really there for everybody else. And if Thanos sees her as a figment of his imagination, or there's any doubt at all that she doesn't actually exist as an actual being, then yeah, all this time he's been alone. And the other thing that we talked about it in the series, but I'll just mention it again, is when Thanos tried to stop killing, issue 3, when he went out, sowed his wild oats, so to speak, across the galaxy. You don't go out there and marry all these women and have children with them if you're not searching for something. You're clearly searching for a way to feel something, to not be alone, to not be lonely. And no matter what Thanos did, and maybe that's the real tragedy of the character, right? No matter what he does, he always feels alone. So again, it'd be interesting to go back once we've read a big chunk of it to see now that Thanos has, regardless of how he or the reasons behind the relationships, he has formed relationships because he's got a strong relationship with Adam Warlock, with Silver Surfer, with Captain Marvel, with Nebula, with Gamora, and it may be because he is a villain. But at least it's relationship. At least it's interacting with other people. So definitely a extremely interesting character. Would love to have Jim Starlin on to talk about him. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, unfortunately. I've tried to have him on before and say, yeah, we'll come on. And then crickets. So, all right. Any last thoughts, Nick?
No, I dug it. I'm ready to get into more Thanos.
More Thanos. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, too, going from this 2013 series with, high glossy paper and good production values, and then we're going to dial it all the way back to Iron Man 55, his first appearance, which, again, and we'll talk about it when we do Iron Man 55, but the whole reason that Starlin put Thanos in the book, and because again, it's a strange place for Thanos to debut, and why he only appeared in one issue of Iron Man. And yeah, we'll cover all that next time. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.